guys, welcome to Rewatchable episode 111, our first recap episode for The Legend of Korra for episodes 1, Welcome to Republic City, and 2, A Leaf in the Wind. I'm your host for this week, and I'll be your host for, I guess, approximately half of these Legend of Korra podcasts. Natalie, I was on the Avatar rewatch as well, hosting, so I'm back, as you may have heard last week. And today we have Caitlin, who's our other super fan, and we have Karen and Brittany, who are our newbies this week. So hello, everyone.
Hello.
If you want to talk to us about the podcast after we finish, or if you just have any feedback for the upcoming episodes, no spoilers for the newbies, please, you can reach us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is re_watchable. You can comment on this podcast post on Hyperbole, or you can hang out on our Tumblr, which is, Brittany, what is the Tumblr handle?
It's rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com.
Yes, and that is Brittany's little paradise of giftdom. So, yeah. We'll go straight into our first couple of episodes because I'm excited to hear what everyone has thought about Legend of Korra. So, Chapter 1, Welcome to Republic City. We've got a fantastic Ariana synopsis coming back. So, Brittany, did you want to read this one?
Sure. I haven't read it before. I refused to read the doc this time beforehand, so
okay,
here we go.
Okay, good.
In this chapter, Korra is the new Avatar, and she thinks cars are weird too, guys, because she's in Republic City, and it's supposed to be an awesome place of peace, but it's not, because mo people means mo problems, and there are these hardly kinder knockoffs who think they're all on Boardwalk Empire. And also, there are these muggles who don't like that wizards run the world, and they might have a point, but we're on hashtag Team Avatar, so who cares? The important thing is that... That's Katara?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. For some reason, I was like, wait a minute. We're not in Avatar anymore, but Katara is still alive. The important thing is that Katara really mellowed out in her old age and at some point decided that she was fine changing her entire personality so she could live out her relationship as the Beta. And I'm sure knowing what we know about Katara being a bit of an attention whore with a hero complex, she would be fine with that. But then again, maybe Sokka dying just made her sad because now there's no one left to be feisty with except for her son Tenzin. But let's be real. We know he's actually the love child of Zuko and Aang, and Katara was just the surrogate. But anyway, he's supposed to teach Korra airbending, but not yet because he's busy. But Korra's like, yes, now I'm the Avatar and obviously the most important. And he's like, okay, you're right, Dad.
Jesus Christ.
That was one sentence.
It was one sentence.
Thanks to Ariana for that. You can expect much more of that as the season devolves into anarchy, I suppose. So we'll go right into the discussion of this. Straight off the bat, the new intro, obviously, you know, it's not everything changed when the Fire Nation attacks anymore. So what did you guys think of that new opening credits, which is voiced by Tenzin kind of talking about the death of Aang and how the Avatar cycle is going on? Caitlin, I'll go to you as a super fan. How did you react the first time you saw this when you watched the show?
I felt like I was having a knife stabbed in my chest.
Yeah.
And I felt that way the same time rewatching it. Like, unexpected feels. Surprisingly painful, and we knew when it was coming out that it was going to be set 70 years in the future, and we're like, okay, obviously new Avatar, Aang is dead, and then they're like, but Aang is gone. I'm like, unexpected feels.
I've got to say, I had the same reaction, and it's not like Aang was ever my number one fave in Atla, but yeah, there's a bit of a difference between setting something like, you know, a future Avatar, like, you know, 300 years, like several, where, you know, when, you know, the characters we knew are like ancient history, to like the recent future, like the not too far future, the immediate future, where it's like that guy that you loved as a 12-year-old is dead. And I kind of every time I it took me about 2 seasons on the first time I watched it, literally not to cry in that intro. Every time I would tear up in this ridiculous way. So how did it go for you guys, Karen and Brittany? Karen, how did you react to that intro?
I didn't cry, but I got goosebumps.
And kind of like what you were saying about how Aang wasn't your fave, he wasn't mine either, but I found throughout these two episodes, I felt really sad about him not being around anymore, possibly more than anybody else. And I don't know if it's because he has such a presence in the show still, you know, and he's referenced so many times, but I was like, man, he's really gone.
Yeah, it's true. He is really gone. Brittany, how about you?
All right, I'm going to sound like I have a rock for a heart, but it didn't hit me at all. Oh, I was like watching it, and I was like, I know I'm supposed to be feeling something. I'm not feeling it, and I feel like I would feel it. You know, I don't know. It didn't hit me. Maybe if I watch it closer. I was kind of like doing things as I was watching Korra until the episode actually started. So maybe I wasn't paying attention enough.
That's okay, Brittany. I'll forgive you. now we have a note here saying, obviously that hot old guy is Zuko. I can't wait for the episode when we find out who's been hiding under Katara's skirt this whole time. Well, okay. Sorry, that's not Zuko. The four avatars, the four benders in that intro are actually all avatars. It's Kyoshi, Roku, Aang, like adult Aang is the airbender in that, and then Korra.
Oh, I thought it was Tenzin. Okay, that's nice to know.
It's adult Aang. Okay. And yeah, I mean, maybe Zuko's hiding under Katara's skirt, but he ain't hiding out in the intro. So sorry about that, guys. Okay, so we then sort of see the White Lotus who have been tasked, you know, by Aang to protect the next Avatar and to kind of train them privately and basically not have them go through what he went through, like traveling the world with no parents and stuff. So they basically go around the world investigating different claims about, you know, I think my baby's the Avatar, and they find this kid who must be about 3 or 4, or they're invited to see this kid who they're pretty, you know, the parents are pretty sure she's the Avatar. And we kind of immediately see why, which is that she can already automatically bend three elements, like earth, air, and fire, you know, in a very untrained manner. And they're just like, yeah, this kid's probably the Avatar. That's our first introduction to Korra. And, you know, you could take it as adorable, but her attitude to me, I will not lie, immediately came across as incredibly arrogant and bratty. And that's definitely an ongoing theme with this character for me, at least until we get a couple of seasons in. So how did you guys react to seeing Korra for the first time? Brittany, what did you think of her?
Well, I was live tweeting, and I live tweeted in all caps from the Rewatchable account, look at this spunky little girl. So I think I'm in favor of her attitude. And that's when I realized I'm like, I'm going to have to take this to my own personal account because I'm really getting a little too excited. No, I loved her. I thought she was the cutest little thing in the world with her little like firebending kick, and she was so cool.
Karen, how about you?
Felt the exact same way. And I could see where this sort of arrogant, cocky personality could be sort of annoying, but I kind of like it, not gonna lie. I like her confidence, and I like how tough she is. And her as a kid was just so cute. So that was, it was pretty funny when she just came barreling through the wall, literally, and started doing all her stuff.
You gotta deal with it.
Caitlin, were you a fan immediately?
I loved her. I think baby Korra is adorable. And I think they do a good job of showing within, like, the first minute that Korra is literally the polar opposite of Aang in every way.
Yeah. I think that's true. You know, you get someone who immediately is very, you know, excited with her position and very into at least the physicality aspect of all of her powers and stuff like that. And yeah, it's really, you know, it does show a lot immediately. We cut straight to adult Korra after that. Well, you know, say 16, 17 years old, where she's basically been living her whole life near her home in the Southern Water Tribe. So she's a water-based avatar because that's the cycle, obviously. And she's mastered three elements of bending already, very sort of professionally and physically. But we kind of learn that she's still got to do airbending and also that she's all about kicking ass and power and, yeah, but isn't really in tune to what it means to be the Avatar on a spiritual level. So, basically the question here is, you know, baby Korra, cutest thing ever, or crazy annoying spoiled child, and then we kind of see that translate through immediately to, I guess, her attitude as the Avatar, you know, as she's coming into it as almost an adult. So we get basically, you know, the introduction to her whole life. And I was just curious about how you guys felt about, I guess, the glimpse of her as an adult and also the way that she's been raised, the way that Aang has requested for her to be raised and trained and all of that kind of thing. So, yeah, Caitlin, how do you feel about kind of, I guess, Korra's life learning to be the Avatar compared to Aang's, I guess?
I can see where he's coming from because Aang had that background as a monk, so I can understand where he would think that would be the best, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to want, as especially because we see that the world has developed a lot in the last 70 years. So keeping Korra isolated, it shows pretty quickly how much of the world she does not understand, and that seems like it would be a hindrance if she's trying to, you know, be the balance between the worlds as the Avatar is supposed to be. So sheltering doesn't necessarily seem like the best idea.
No, fair enough. Karen, was this kind of, I mean, I don't know what you were expecting, but when you kind of thought about where we'd meet Korra and her, what age we'd meet her at and what her life would be like and what journeys we'd see of her, was anything of this what you were expecting?
A little bit, because I'd been sort of familiar with the show from the outside for a little while, so I knew that she was going to be grown up a bit more. However, I was not expecting her to be so different from Aang, and, you know, the more I think about it, the more that makes absolute sense, but I'm also really happy that they decided to do it that way, because I feel like a lot of her personality and a lot of the issues that she has and the things she has to learn kind of play into the fact that, okay, Aang is gone. This is a completely different person. She needs to learn the things that he sort of was already aware of. Like, he was pretty spiritual even for a kid because of how he grew up. And that's what Korra is struggling with. So the fact that they're polar opposites, I kind of, it leads from one into the other. It also reminds us a lot of Aang and what he was like, which is nice because even though this is a new show, you don't want to forget about him that soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good example of sort of immediately introducing the, I guess, the struggles and the challenges that, you know, a different Avatar can face, that it's not going to be the same for everyone, because, and it also just shows how much being the Avatar doesn't really affect your personality. Like, Aang wasn't that way because he was the Avatar. Aang was that way because it was his personality, like, you know, the spiritual side and all of that kind of thing. Like, anyone can be the Avatar, and, you know, they just got to deal with it, basically, you know, and they've got to overcome the more difficult parts. Like, there might be someone who becomes the Avatar who's, like, literally really bad at bending, just because they have the power. It doesn't mean, and Korra's, you know, obviously has the physical power, but a lot of struggles that Aang didn't have. We also learn that Katara's been hanging out there, old lady Katara, and that her son, Tenzin, is going to be the only person, basically the only airbending master in the world, because he inherited that power, you know, hereditary from Aang. And so Tenzin is meant to come and train Korra to be an airbender, and I guess that's pretty exciting. And then he, you know, there's old lady Katara, and then Tenzin shows up with his family, his pregnant wife and his three children, who are all also airbenders. So they're like repopulating the world with airbenders, which is nice. But yeah, just how did you guys react to this? I like to seeing old lady Katara and to seeing the new airbenders. Brittany, how did you feel?
First of all, Tenzin is the best person I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's my favorite. He's my favorite character, one of them in the show.
When he arrived and just, like, stood in front of his Katara, and he was just like, "Hello, mother," and there are children crawling all over him, I was like, this is this is my character. Done. Signed, sealed, delivered. Yep. Like, I don't need to see anyone else. I know there's a new Boomy. I don't need to see him. I don't need to see it. It's fine. It's all good. And did you guys see, I don't know if anyone's following my live tweet of this. He was eating lettuce leaves in the first, like, meal that he was having on screen. So, come on.
Yeah, Tenzin is one of my favorites for sure. And yes, I love that you love him when he's such a polar opposite to Boomy, or the original Boomy.
He is such a polar opposite.
And it shows that Brittany loves all types. But yeah, you get a mention of her other children, Kaya and Boomy, Katara's children with Aang or Zuko, who knows. Yeah, and so we meet Tenzin. He's the youngest, and he's the only airbender. So he is, as I said, adorable. I love him. Karen, how did you feel, I suppose, meeting these fellows?
Oh, my gosh. Tenzin, immediate favorite. Immediate. Yeah. I love how stoic he is. And, you know, things are just going crazy, and he just has that look of, like, get me out of here, and he's just like, help me, mother, and it was so good. But the children are so adorable, and it's gonna take me a little while to remember their names, but I like the oldest one because she's so calm and intelligent, introspective, but then the middle child, who just will not shut up, is super adorable.
Caitlin, who is your favorite Aang grandchild?
I have a soft spot for Milo, but there are parts of his humor that we'll see that are not my favorite, so I have to say Jenora, who's the oldest.
Yeah.
I like when it's later on, but she's like, Tenzin's like, please don't let your teenage years be like this. Yeah. She's like, I can make no such promises.
Yeah.
Straight face. I love her.
Jenora is my fave as well. She's one of my favorite characters in the entire series. I won't say more than that, but I'll just give you a little rundown in case the newbies missed them a little bit. The oldest is called Jenora, and she's about 10 or so, I think, at the moment, and then Iki is the middle girl, who is the crazy one, and Milo is the baby boy. Ariana's put a note in here asking, why don't the airbending girls shave their hair? Again, I don't want to talk too much about this because it is kind of a process that you'll see, but I'll just say Milo's shaved head is not because he's an airbender. It's because he's like a baby that would like pull out his own hair probably. But the whole process of becoming an initiated airbender monk with the tattoos and shaved head is like a process for adults, basically. Like Aang was quite young to have it. They're not old enough for that yet, basically, is the reason for that. So yeah, another question was, where did the new Appa come from? The sky bison. This is important. Can Appa procreate all by himself like frogs do? Is that a thing? That's not how frogs have babies. But no, again, I can't remember if this is, oh God, Caitlin, do you remember if this is ever addressed in the show, or if this was just like canon put out before the show that there was going to be more sky bison and flying lemurs and stuff?
I think it was extraneously mentioned.
Yeah. Basically, they found another island where there was a different strain of the creatures, the airbending creatures, and Aang brought them to Air Temple Island to, like, recreate his, like, airbending childhood paradise. And so they all have those animals again. It's cute. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at. We also learn that when Katara and Korra, that girl, Korra, have a conversation, that Sokka is confirmed # dead. So
that made me really sad too.
Do we find out how he died? Did I just miss it?
No, she's just like, my brother and most of my friends are gone.
I'm assuming that means dead. Because I feel like he wasn't looking and he fell off a cliff, because that's just something he would do.
If that makes you feel better, okay.
Like, I feel like he should go out like that. Just, you know, be in soccer.
True. Caitlin, when you sort of first watched the show, were you expecting, like, what characters from the old show were you, like, expecting / hoping to be alive and which were you, I guess, hoping or just thinking that might have died? Like, were you glad to keep Katara? Would have you rather kept Sokka or, you know, any of the others?
I mean, it makes the most sense for Katara, I think, to be alive at this point, just from a narrative standpoint, for, like, pushing Korra, who is a waterbender, on to her destiny or whatever. That makes the most sense for Katara. I can't remember how many characters we knew going in were alive, because they did some, like, pre-release information releases that told us that some of them were still alive and some weren't, and then left the fates of some of them up in the air. So when she's like, most of my friends are long gone, so we go, okay, which ones? Sokka and who? So there's still some mystery there. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, then, you know, talking about, I guess, adult Katara, like grown-up Katara, we've got, Ariana has got some feelings, because obviously she was a big Katara fan, so I'll just read what she said. She's like a whole new person, which makes sense because she's lived an entire lifetime. I guess I just have a weird time imagining her being happy playing the second string mom at home in the South Pole while Avatar Aang has his adventures. I mean, yeah, that's true. She does seem very mellow and happy to be supportive, which is not really the 14-year-old Katara we knew and some of us loved. But I'm kind of assuming that she only went to the South Pole to help with Korra after Aang died. Like, I don't think that she just stayed at home and raised kids the whole time. I mean, I hope. Because we see, obviously, Tenzin was, you know, an airbender, and he, you know, had his whole airbending life in Republic City. Maybe they all lived in Republic City until Aang died. I don't know. My big thing, though, is how is it for this whole family? Like, Katara, the kids, like Tenzin, to be working with Korra when they know, like, it's the reincarnation of Aang. Like, isn't that, like, super depressing? Like,
I was thinking about that, like, when she was like, being so pushy and he had to, like, teach her airbending. I'm like, he has to go back and, like, be his dad now. Like, you know, it's different with his kids, I feel like, but to train an avatar, it's like, it's a whole different layer to it. You know, I was thinking, I'm like, maybe that's why he doesn't want to do this right now. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's so weird. Yeah, Karen, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, it's sort of twofold for me. On the one hand, I kind of see it being a comfort, because it's kind of like Aang isn't really gone. But on the other hand, Korra's personality is so different from Aang's that I wonder if they kind of forget that it's a reincarnation, and they just kind of, you know, push that to the back of their mind and keep going with life.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just, it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be something that, you know, Avatar a few generations along would face. Like, they wouldn't be trained by people who necessarily knew the immediate previous Avatar. But at the moment, you know, because of Aang, you know, being the last airbender and just what he wanted for the next one, it's totally, like, his whole family. It's like, here's dad again. It's weird. And I find it weird and depressing, but never mind. So she runs away basically to Republic City when Tenzin says he can't train her, can't move to the South Pole and train her in order to help her out with airbending, because he is one of the leaders, like he's on the council of Republic City, and he has to deal with big things going on there at the moment, which, I mean, I guess that's fair enough, because it's not like there's a big comet coming to destroy the world and the Avatar is the only one can help it. Like, you know, there are probably plenty of Avatars who their whole reign, do we call it like a reign? Like, do they, other, whatever. Their whole lifetime of being the Avatar is like, yeah, just whatever, no big deal, nothing much happened. But Korra's like, yeah, not having that, I want to learn now because I'm the Avatar and you got to deal with it. So she runs away with her polar bear dog, Naga. Do we like Naga, guys?
I think I need to see more of her first. I thought it was cute that one part where she, like, stuck her head in the tent and wanted to eat, but then Korra was like, no, stop, and she stopped right before she was about to chow down. But she doesn't seem to have as much personality as Appa, and that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah. Caitlin, Were you a fan of the animals, the new sort of animals that we see in this series?
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually disagree with Karen that Naga doesn't seem to initially have a lot of personality, so I can totally see where that's coming from, but I'm a dog person, so I'm just immediately like, aw, polar bear dog, here for it, absolutely.
Yeah. So she's a bit less useful than Arthur, I suppose, in that she can't fly, but never mind. So, you know, they run away, and basically, you know, her home in the Southern Water Tribe, South Pole, is very similar to the kind of, lifestyle and industry that we're kind of introduced to in Atla, that kind of same level of, you know, housing, lifestyle, etc. And then we go to Republic City, which is, like, totally another world, basically, the development of civilization or technology has been a huge gap. And I guess the biggest question is, I know that we talked about that in the preview episode and stuff like that, but were you guys expecting this much of an advancement in 70 years? Because we're up to kind of the era of, say, technology of like maybe 1920s USA, like kind of old cars, cameras, you know, very, you know, early microphone techniques and radio and all of that kind of thing. Yeah, Brittany, were you expecting that kind of level of technology and advancement?
I mean, timeline wise, I guess it would make sense if, like, you know, the mechanic from the last season, like, got in charge of a city and sort of unleashed his plans on the world. But then again, it was very jarring in addition to, I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but, like, in addition to the new, like, animation style that we're seeing, too, it was just all, it was a lot of new at once for me, I think.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, it was a lot of new at once. Karen, how about you?
I wasn't expecting it to be so advanced. I was thinking, like, because, okay, in Avatar The Last Airbender, it was a very sort of like pastoral kind of, you know, community with not a lot of technology. And I was expecting maybe some more advanced technology, like late 1800s sort of industrial revolution type of thing, where it's still very like steam powered and everything. But now we have cars and all this other stuff. And I like that because I think it adds a new sort of twist to the story where Korra highlights it, where she's like, I need to learn some modern stuff. Like, this old ancient stuff isn't working anymore. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing to deal with, between her wanting to be more modern and Tenzin being like, but these are the ancient ways and you have to follow them. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. I think that Atla was sort of, you're right in saying that it was sort of very pastoral and a little bit medieval in general, but there were just touches of the start of the Industrial Revolution there with, you know, some of the, you know, the tanks and weaponry, especially that the Fire Nation had. And I think that, you know, with added bend involved, you know, to a society, basically the society is able to, I guess, sort of advance by using magic, quote unquote, magic and science together. So they kind of went from Industrial Revolution to kind of that era a little bit faster than the real world did. Caitlin, were you kind of a fan of the era that this is set in, or were you kind of hoping for less technology, etc.?
I like it. It's just another way to highlight that this is not your mama's Avatar. Like, this
is
a completely different thing. So it helps in a visual sense to be like, this is a different world. I need to rein in any expectations that I have that it's going to be just like the old one. The Avatar is completely different. The world has changed. Even the music takes on that kind of 20s feel, so
yeah.
I like the, it's kind of a visual way to highlight differences too.
Yeah, it's true. And then basically Republic City, for those who don't know or didn't catch it, you know, was a place set up by Aang and Zuko in a Fire Nation colony, so somewhere that, you know, Earth Kingdom place that the Fire Nation used to sort of terrorize. as kind of a place where all nations can live together, and it's meant to be the center of peace and harmony and equality and sharing and stuff like that. And you can actually read the history of how that started in one of the comics, if you should choose to. And we learn pretty immediately that it's not as peaceful and harmonic as it's meant to be, because there are some protests going on by non-benders, a non-bending sect, who are thinking it's kind of wrong, I guess, that the benders are in power, that the benders control things, that the benders can basically have power that non-benders don't have. And whether that's power in the government, I don't think they're talking about. I think they're literally talking about the physical power of being able to bend versus non-bending. So this is a really interesting concept, I think, as a villain idea, as an antagonist idea, because it's not something that was ever really addressed in Atla. But we obviously, as normal human beings who don't get to do bending, it's kind of an interesting thing to be confronted with, saying if that was the thing in society, if it was like open, that there were these people that had like way more physical power than us, that just use that physical power in the world, just whatever, just doing their thing. Would that be seen as like a superiority thing? Like, what side would you be on of that? Obviously, we're on the Avatar's side because we're watching Korra. We're not watching, you know, non-benders unite and take over the world. But it's weird. And Ariana has written about this kind of in a similar way, saying, I think the non-benders are going to be the bad guys, which makes me sad because, like, TV, movies, books always glorify magic and the extraordinary. But, like, we are human, guys. It's okay to be normal and human. And also, like, if people had magic IRL, I can totally see how it would be really frustrating to be non-magical, you know, exactly how we are now, and feel like the privileged magic people had all the power. Oh, wait, that is exactly how things are now, except instead of magic, we use money. So, yeah, I mean, this is a very similar idea to how I kind of feel about the idea of non-powered people rebelling against people who have more power. I mean, we in this world see that as a good thing. We see that as a progressive thing, but here we're seen as the bad guys. So how did you guys react to seeing that, I guess? And had you ever sort of thought about it in that concept? Caitlin, when you first watched it, was this the kind of conflict that you're ever expecting to come up?
No, but like the way you're explaining it, the more you think about it, the more it makes sense. You're like, of course. And these people are, you know, getting pushed into tighter spaces as things are urbanizing in the area, so they're going to be more directly impacted by benders. And we're not that far out of memory of the everything changing the day the Fire Nation is hacked. So, like, that was all benders who were oppressing during the Hundred Years' War. So it makes sense that there's that feeling of oppression and maybe a lack of safety available to non-benders. So it totally makes sense, but was definitely not what I was initially expecting.
Yeah. Karen, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, it only takes one or two bad benders to make all the non-benders not feel safe. So it makes a lot of sense. And I think I wasn't really too sympathetic to their cause at first, because they were sort of like, oh, down with the benders, and obviously we're rooting for the Avatar and everything. But then Korra was like, yeah, bending's like the most awesome thing in the entire world.
Like,
and
wow, way to help your cause.
Yeah,
girl.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I get why bending is amazing. Obviously, the Avatar specifically does a lot of really good things with it. But at the same time, it gives people a lot of power, and not all people are good people. So if I was a non-bender, I would definitely be afraid of benders.
Yeah. Brittany, how about you? Are you on Team Avatar or Team Equality?
I mean, I'm always on Team Avatar, because Team Avatar will use their powers for good. However, I could see, like, let's say, like, that guy who was on the stand, like, giving out that radical, or not even radical, speech. But he, like, you don't know his backstory. Maybe he had a family who was imprisoned by the Fire Nation 70 years ago. You know what I mean? So it was like, we saw how bad bending could be. We saw how good it could be. And then we saw the tension that created with bending. And now I like this whole new dynamic of non-bending versus bending, as opposed to bending versus bending, because you kind of forget about the non-benders. Like, we always had Sokka and like Suki, but like they had these other skill sets that we focused on so much that it sort of that kind of went away. And I like that they have this tension because it wasn't something I thought would ever be brought up, because in my mind I was just like, oh yeah, benders versus benders, that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, like I'm kind of surprised, I guess, that, you know, it's not even sort of a matter of good and evil for me. It's just in general the power balance of some people literally having, like, being allowed just by nature to have more power to use against people, basically. And you know, it's a little bit like, you know, Superhero Registration Act, I suppose, in Marvel, like that kind of thing, like people being like, you know, okay, we want these people held accountable for the power that they have. And I'm surprised it was something that was never brought up that much in Atla, except for sometimes that, you know, Sokka would be like, oh, I'm just the non-bender, whatever. There was never like people in the towns being like, oh, your bending has ruined our lives, or, you know, just anything about the power imbalance. It was never really addressed, but this shows a little bit more grown-up themes and we're tackling it now. So Korra basically, you know, she's like, you know, screw you to those people. And then she goes and sees some bad guys, some mafia triads, or, you know, mob gangs, etc., you know, hassling a shopkeeper to basically you know, pay for his stuff. And she sort of catches them while also destroying a bunch of public property. And just when you're like, oh yeah, this is what the Avatar always does, right? Like, you know, they get away with this kind of thing. No, immediately she's arrested and held accountable for basically breaking up a whole street, which is something that we didn't see too much of in Atla or in superhero movies in general, I guess, like the accountability of the her actions in terms of damage. So, yeah, again, was that something that you guys were kind of glad to see, I suppose, or like, you know, putting her in that mess? Yeah, Karen, how did you kind of feel about her little do-gooding deed, I guess?
Well, I really liked that fight, and I was glad that she stepped in to stop them. But as it was happening, I was like, she's making more of an issue than the guys were. I mean, as soon as she sent that first guy through the window, I was like, who's going to fix that? Who's going to pay for it? She isn't. She doesn't have any money. This is already established. So I think that for the beginning, this is really good to see, because we've been told that she's very powerful, but she doesn't have control. And I think seeing that more and more throughout the first part of the series is going to be really important to establish, hopefully later on, when she gains more control, how significant that is.
Yeah, and she seems to just really relish in the fight and being able to use her powers and stuff, which isn't really what it's about, I suppose.
It seems to tie into her sheltered upbringing, too. Like, it just doesn't occur to her to think about, because it's just something she was never surrounded with.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, you know, she knows about things like, you know, money. Like, she knows that money exists, but she still goes into a stall and tries to order all food without, you know, having any. And I don't know what she really expected to happen when she's like, you have to pay for it. But yeah, it is a little bit, I suppose, yeah, ridiculous to expect her to be able to get by. And again, I don't know if this was a good thing that she was just like kept in that like snow fort forever. Like, it seems a bit, any 18-year-old who goes out into the world without being socialized in society is not going to be in a very good way. But maybe Aang wanted to keep the Avatar really in that kind of pastoral, spiritual space of like the simple life, and that, you know, she was meant to be nothing but a you know, well-meaning monk. But unfortunately, that's not what we got. So yeah, so the bad guys are arrested, but Korra's also arrested for all of the damages that she did. We see the city's police, Republic City's police, that's led by a team of metal benders. So that's a skill that's extended to the rest of the world. And pretty soon we find out why, because the chief of police is Lin Beifong, as in Toph's daughter. That we immediately, and Korra's immediately like, oh yeah, I totally knew your mom. Like, you know, my dad, you know, my my spiritual dad, your mom, BFFs, why are you giving me a hard time? I was doing good. They used to do this stuff. Hey, what's up? And Lynn's like, yeah, no. And so I kind of love that. Brittany, how did you find that, that kind of introduction of, I guess, like a new descendant and her attitude about the olden days, I suppose?
I like that we had a new descendant. I thought it was like really cool and she was really cool, but I don't like the way Cora was with her, because I feel like Cora's very immature. Like, it just drove me crazy. Like, when she like stuck her tongue out at her or whatever when they were leaving and they did that eye thing or whatever. And I liked Toph's daughter so much better. What's her name again? I just forgot it. Lynn. Okay. Lynn. Yeah, I liked her so much better in that moment. I'm like, this girl, I can get behind. I'm like, before then, I didn't have a problem with Cora up until that when I saw her interact with her. I was like, oh, God, no.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. She's very entitled and she's very arrogant. And I think a lot of that comes from growing up in a snow fort where everything's focused on her because she's the avatar, if you know what I mean. She's like the center of everyone's universe.
Oh, yeah, and kind I was of also thinking,
expects
like,
to be treated like that.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, would I give her a pass if we had another 12-year-old avatar and she was acting like this? Like, would I be, like, more okay with it, I guess?
Yeah, that's true. Caitlin, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I think Lynn is... Okay, Lynn is one of my favorite characters in the series, but I do think she's kind of rough with Cora at this point. She's like, get her out of my city. I don't want anything to do with her. You're awful. Like, she's pretty rough to her on the same time. And she initiates that like staring scene at the end too. Not Cora's not the one. She's responding to it. So Lynn doesn't come off super well in the scene either, but she comes off very gruff, very much like her mother.
Yeah. And I mean, her reaction to kind of to her mother, I guess, you know, to Cora trying to drop the mum card is not super positive, which makes me a little bit curious about what her relationship with her mother was like as well. But we kind of know that she knows Tenzin, because Tenzin comes in to get Cora, basically, when he finds out that she's basically in his city destroying property. And they kind of have a little bit of a, you know, hello, Lynn, hello, Tenzin, how are you kind of thing. Ariana said, do you sense the weird sexual tension between her and Tenzin? Ooh, I sense a history. Maybe Toph forced her daughter to take Tenzin to prom as a favor to Aang. I bet the potlucks were fabulous. Get your coat, honey. The Avatar's having a barbecue. But really, forget Cora. I want to watch the series where all of the gang's kids have to grow up in their parents' shadows, living the hard knock life, and like kind of hating each other, but also being forced to go to each other's birthday parties. But then wait, someone captures all of the adults in the world and they have to band together to get their parents back. And they come to the realization that they are their own individuals and they all have something, they have something to offer all on their own. That would be a beautiful story.
Yeah, Nickelodeon needs to pick that up now.
Yeah.
That sounds
like
a Disney Channel movie.
Can Ariana just like write a new series?
Yeah, that would be great.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, so obviously Tenzin is, you know, the child of Aang and Katara. You know, we don't know what's up, you know, with Zuko, like who's the fire, you know, Fire Lord, etc. You know, we know that Toph had, you know, at least one child who's here in Republic City. As for, you know, her and Tenzin having a history, I mean, yes, they definitely know each other. To go in further, no comment. So you'll have to just wait and see. But I would say, yes, there's definitely all of these Avatar gang children definitely have history and grew up together. So, yeah. And now that they've decided that basically Cora is going to stay, I mean, they try to ship her back to the South Pole, and then Tenzin's like, I guess you can stay here and I'll teach you, I guess. So they give her a press conference to announce to Republic City that she's there and that she'll be staying around and trying to learn to be the Avatar. And she
but
does
how
have
is
nice
that smart? Because they're trying, she's like not a calm, level-headed person. Like, why would you give her public attention?
I don't know.
I was so confused with that.
I guess because there are already rumors going around of, you know, those, you know, oh my God, some crazy girl in the city. She did earthbending and firebending. Like, you know, there were already those two
random people who saw it
and reacted. So, you know, rather than rumors spreading, they kind of want the truth, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she does have a little humble moment in that speech, but, like, yeah, was it weird for you guys to see, like, the officiality of it? Like, yeah, the Avatar's having a press conference. Like, imagine the Avatar in, like, 2015 society and how that would be handled. Imagine the Avatar's Twitter account. Like,
I was just going to say that.
I mean, I would not want to be Korra's press secretary, like, running around and filling everything.
Yeah,
you're like, yeah, she crashed a market again today.
Yeah, Karen, how did you feel about sort of seeing that kind of officiality, I guess, of announcing Korra to the world?
It was super weird, just because we're so used to, in Atla, him being a secret and not wanting to reveal who he is because it's safer that way. And obviously this is a new society, so it makes sense that it's changed, but I think I'm still used to it being such a secret that I'm like, wait, who allowed her to have a press conference? Who thought this was okay? But, you know, I think it's going to offer its own set of problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. It's a new world, new society, etc. I just want to see. So a couple of thoughts about the episode that Ariana's put in here was that she finds it really difficult to believe that Zuko was not Korra's fire training master. I get that he's got important stuff to do, like apparently Tenzin does too, but seriously, she's the Avatar. She's like the most important element in the world. Also Zuko's best friend slash great grandpa. Also, maybe she would calm down and stop acting like she's the boss, like have some humility, woman. I mean, yeah, Zuko probably has better things to do, slash he's also not literally the best firebender in the world. Like, he's okay, but he ain't, like, perfect. And there are plenty of firebenders to go around, whereas there's only one airbender to train her. But we'll hear more about Fire Nation stuff later. And then the first episode ended. We don't really have a central villain or a central group of friends yet, unlike Zuko, Katara, Sokka, in the first season of Atla, which leads me to believe the individual villains and groups of friends won't be as important here as it was with Aang, but with Korra, maybe the more important thing will be her self-actualization and learning from her mentors, which really got highlighted in the episode. I mean, I don't know. Caitlin, what would you say to that?
I mean, I thought we did set up a villain at the very end.
Yeah. So,
who was the guy in the mask listening to the radio and being ominous? Like, that looked like a villain.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll obviously get more in the next episode, which is a bit, like, less. It's sort of one central plot. Like, a lot happened in this first episode, and we'll carry on to the next one. Favorite scenes and lines, quickly, of this episode. My favorite scene was meeting Tenzin and the kids and also meeting Lin. But, yeah, Karen, do you wanna go down the list here?
Yeah, mine was Korra's firebending fight that we got at the top of the episode, because I just love the fighting style in both of these shows, and I love seeing those scenes, but also because she just came out so strong right at the beginning of the episode and the series, and it makes me really excited to see what she's going to be capable of when she's able to master all of the elements.
Fair enough. Caitlin, how about you?
My favorite scene was, we briefly mentioned it earlier, when Korra's leaving the police department and Korra and Lin have a I'm watching you moment. It was just so ridiculous in the situation, and I cracked up laughing.
Yeah, my favorite was actually at the very end, like Lin's like reaction after Korra does her whole tongue thing. She's like, ugh. But yeah, Brittany, how about you?
Just Tenzin saying, hello, mother. And the lettuce leaf that he has to eat. I'm sorry. It was a big boomy moment for me. And did Brittany, you see on the Twitter, one of our listeners drew boomy? Did you guys see that? Oh my God.
Yes.
I'm going to put it at the end of the doc for later, but let's
see. There's a link in there for
awesome.
Our listener feedback. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay, favorite lines. Mine, I put actually the bit from the intro about Aang being dead. So Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly his time in this world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. Just like the setup of basically the whole concept of what we're going to be doing and you know, hashtag dead Aang and everything. Yeah, it still moves me quite a bit. And I don't know, I still like that. So yeah, how about you, Karen?
when one of the mobster guys was like, "Who do you think you are?" to Korra, and she just goes, "Why don't you come and find out?" And I was like, "Yeah, you get him," because I knew that she was just gonna destroy them, and it was wonderful to watch.
And Caitlin?
So mine is when Korra's trying to convince Tenzin to let her stay on Air Temple Island, and he's like, "No, you have to go back," and she's like, "Katara thought it was a good idea," and Tenzin just has his face goes red. He's, "Don't bring my mother into this!" Like, he just freaks out.
This was my number one quote that Caitlin stole.
Mine too!
Okay, that's okay. But yeah, it was definitely my favorite. But yeah, it was so good. And again, there's clearly some issues there with you know, Tenzin and his family, and I love him. And
stoic
just
Tenzin
so much.
With the comedic moment.
Yeah, I love him so much. And then Brittany.
Baby Korra, when she's like, "I'm the Avatar, you gotta deal with it."
Yes. All right. Very good. Okay, so we'll go quickly into A Leaf in the Wind, which is Korra's first attempt at airbending training and also her first introduction to a few other big things in her new city. Brittany, do you want to read this synopsis for me again?
Yeah. Okay. In this chapter, Korra is trying to learn to airbend, but she cannot be Zen, and it is really hard, so she runs away to the boxing football game where she meets some rockin' hot guys, and so girl is like, "I'ma get it." But then the super hot one is unimpressed, so she has to play the Avatar card to show off, and then she later jumps in the game too, and they win, obviously, because she's the Avatar, and is not disqualified, even though it is unfair. Except then Tenzin shows up, and he's mad, but Korra doesn't want to go home because she's the Avatar, and she can do what she wants. So he stays and watches her, and then he's happy, even though she disobeyed him and was a total brat. At least she's practicing her Tai Chi.
I mean, that's a pretty solid summary. Basically, the main plot of the episode is Korra.
Is that the two hot guys show up?
The two hot guys show up. Korra is is trying to learn her first airbending lessons, but is also obsessed with going off to watch pro bending, which is like the Quidditch of this world, basically. So, Few discussions. First of all, Ariana says she likes the airbending door game so much more than the ball boxing game. I mean, I don't know. I really like pro bending, so I don't know if I agree with that. How about you guys?
Pro bending is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the ball game too, though. The airbending door game. I thought for some reason, I wasn't looking at the doc. I thought we were talking about, remember that game? Where that there's weird animation episode.
Yeah.
You had to get the thing. I like that game too. But anyway, pro bending is legit. Like, they have uniforms and everything. It's really cool. I like it. It reminded me of like, have you ever seen like Guts or like, it used to be on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, like those shows where the kids had to compete in like weird challenges.
Yeah, like they're
Legends
like
of the Hidden
water.
Temple or something.
Yeah, stuff like that. I like it.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of an Ariana mental breakdown here. saying, I get the core as the opposite of Zen, and her oppositeness to Aang is part of her charm, but she was a straight-up bitch in this episode, like, don't bite the hand that feeds you and maybe work hard and actually practice. Wait, of course she's exactly like Aang. She doesn't like to practice. Why are there so many lazy avatars? Can you imagine if, like, Zuko or Katara or Sokka were the avatar? So much shit would get done. They would have stopped the Fire Lord in book one just because they don't mess around and have tenacity and practice. But maybe that's like a caveat that comes with being the Avatar. When everything is so easy for you, you get complacent and don't like it when things are hard. I mean, I think that's just a thing of entitlement. You know, when you're told you're the center of the universe, you're going to be so powerful, you're going to be so great, etc. Yeah, I think I can see that being realistic. It does get me a little bit annoyed that every time that she attempts that door game, she doesn't try anything new. I noticed this so strongly on this rewatch that, like, she just runs through it. She doesn't actually try to learn. And this is something that annoys me about people in general. When they don't actually try to learn something, they physically attempt it, but they're not, like, mentally trying to do it. And I feel like she was just running in and she wasn't actually trying what she'd been taught to do. So it annoyed the hell out of me. So, yeah, how did you guys feel about her attitude to airbending training, I guess? Karen, how did you sort of see that?
Yeah, it was really frustrating, and especially when she started going through those doors more and more often, I was like, look, obviously what you've been doing the last 20 times isn't working, so why don't you try something new and actually try listening? But then again, I mean, she's just an impatient person, and she's so powerful with her other three elements that I feel like she thinks she can force airbending out, that she can force it into submission, maybe like she does with the other bending powers, but she can't. And it's, I just have a feeling it's going to take her a while to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I guess we haven't talked about either. Like, you know, that she can't airbend. It's not that she hasn't learned. It's that, you know, we knew that she could naturally do all of the other bending even from childhood, but she's never been able to manage even a puff of airbending, and that there must be something sort of blocking her from doing that. You know, we learn that, you know, it's probably because it's the opposite of her personality. She's not really what we'd expect as a typical waterbender either. I mean, there are plenty of, I guess, fighting waterbenders, but, you know, she's not really that similar to Katara. But basically, yeah, she's annoying. The kids are more awesome than her. And she runs away to the city to watch pro bending match because Tenzin tells her that she can't. And she is being rather ungrateful and horrible, I will say that. So, yeah. So we go and she watches a pro bending match. She sneaks into the match and she meets Bolin, who is a member of one of the teams, with his brother Marco. And she kind of, you know, gets him to let her stay. And he's all like, oh, a girl who might like me. And she watches the pro bending match and we meet those two boys. So I guess, yeah, reactions, immediate reactions to pro bending itself and Bolin and Marco. So yeah, Caitlin, when you first watched the show, how did you feel about seeing it? And any changes now, like to meeting the boys, given what you know now, I suppose?
I have a stronger appreciation for Korra and Bolin's, like, immediate being able to play off each other, like,
yeah,
like they just fall into that conversation with back and forth just like that so yeah. Quickly. I love that so much. Like, didn't mean to imply it. Oh, you did. Like,
oh, you implied.
Bam,
it.
Bam,
yeah.
Bam, bam, bam. Like, they have really great, like, immediate chemistry. I'm like, you are destined to be a bromance. I see it now.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I really liked them. Marco is not, he doesn't come across well. I don't think he's meant to come across well immediately. But yeah, Brittany, how did you find the new boys?
Well, I obviously like Marco a lot because he's like the new misunderstood, grumpy, brooding guy who I don't think is wearing red face paint for the first three episodes of the series. So, and he instantly jumped to, like, mid-season two, like, Zuko hair, which I appreciate because I don't want to wait that long to get to the good hair phase. Like, I like when they come out right out of the gate with the good hair. But beyond a superficial sketch that someone made in an office in Orlando, Florida, I like the way that they play off each other. They're two very different personalities, and I like that Korra is kind of in the middle. She's challenging them both, like, physically and, like, just their banter back and forth. I really like that they're going to hang out a lot more, or I hope that they do, because she joined the team, so seems likely.
Yeah. Karen, how about you? Marco is even more of a Derek Hale than Zuko ever was, FYI. Oh.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say, I like him a lot, very cute, definitely already have a crush on him. I like that he's the brooding, misunderstood, like Brittany was saying, sort of like, I just can't be bothered kind of person. But then, you know, when he realizes who Korra is, kind of takes that step back and is like, oh, well, I kind of just shot myself in the foot a little bit. And
I hated that. Sorry, can I? This is something that I didn't kind of realize till my second watch. Was that, like, Marco, you could have just been respectful to any new person you met. It's like, it's only like, oh, you're the Avatar, I better be nice to you and respect you. It's like, how about you just respect anyone? Like, how about
He has a bit of a superiority complex, and I think it's because he's so serious, and he's just, you know, he mentioned about his brother having all his, like, fans up in the box and stuff, and I think he's just tired of it, and he's just not interested in that sort of thing. So, I don't know. I liked him, though. And then Bolin, he's kind of bumbling and silly, charismatic. He's nice. I don't feel too much about him yet, but I could probably like him if we see more of him.
Caitlin, how are you about Marco?
On first watch, I was like that. I'll just put it on that way. I was very much instantly smitten with Marco, and this time around, I was far more interested in Bolin.
I will agree with that. Exactly the same for me. But yeah, and so we've got a couple of questions here. So these brothers are like the new Sokka and Katara, right? Though they feel more like Sokka and Zuko. I mean, yeah, I suppose that's true. And they said, ooh, are we shipping yet? Is it like the Vampire Diaries and both brothers will fall in love with the same girl? Whose team are you on then? I don't watch Vampire Diaries, so I don't care. But, I mean, yeah, obviously Marco's like, ooh, a pretty girl who... obviously Bolin is like, ooh, a pretty girl who might think I'm cool. So we'll see about shipping. Is anyone shipping yet?
Maybe.
No.
Maybe. I haven't. Karen?
No, I definitely haven't, at least.
Okay. Karen, what are you shipping?
Marco.
And Tora.
Yeah. Just because I like that sort of tension, enemies to friends type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see where it goes, I guess.
Ariana would like to say that she thinks the dorky guy is super cute, but he doesn't stand a chance because he's obviously the Wallace to his brother's Logan. I assume about Veronica Mars that I don't understand.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't get it either, but they had a good laugh, so that's all that matters.
It's accurate. Yeah.
Actually.
I'm glad someone enjoyed that. I have a little thing. Did any of you guys kind of obviously notice that the pro bending, you know, they played several games, you know, and the concept is, you know, three people on one team, you know, water, fire and earth, because there's only a couple of airbenders, so they're not included. And you know, you play with a full team and then you kind of use your powers to knock people back off the game board or whatever. Obviously Marco and Bolin are brothers, but one's an earthbender and one's a firebender. So did anyone sort of have any questions about that, I suppose? It's pretty simple, but it's not really spoilery. It's just sort of exemplary of Republic City. But did you guys sort of notice that?
I didn't, because it didn't click until, like, the end. I know that they said right from the get-go that they were brothers, but then I, like, immediately forgot that fact, like, instantly. So I was like, oh, like, this makes sense, because one's an earthbender, one's a firebender. They're friends. They found a waterbender. Like, good for them. And then at the end, I was like, oh, wait, they are brothers, but I never thought about it again.
Yeah. Karen, any kind of thoughts about that?
At first, I was like, wait, are they really brothers? Is he just saying
Or are they just,
that?
Like, adopted brothers?
Yeah. I was, kind of confused, but then I thought about it, and I was like, no, okay, that makes sense. I mean, it's just, you know, two different kinds of benders coming together, and then, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, it seems normal to me.
It definitely didn't happen as much in, you know, past world, because the nations didn't intermingle as much, but in Republic City, you know, nice firebender could meet nice earthbender and they could have children, and instead of having a weird mash of, like, only being able to bend really hot mud, you get one firebender and one earthbender baby. And obviously Aang and Katara had a few kids, so, and we know Tenzin is the only earthbender, so her other kid, you know, their other kids might be something else, and, you know, don't know if the Avatar has the ability to pass any bending on to anyone or only their natural bending. But yeah, so as far as we know, Tenzin is the only airbending descendant, though not Aang's only child, so that's something to look forward to. Must be really frustrating that no matter how difficult Korra is to work with, nobody can ever give up on her because she's the only Avatar. I mean, that's true. You could just kill her and hope for better with the baby.
Oh my god,
sorry.
Yes, because no one has ever been a teenager before. Like,
she's not that bad, sorry. But I'm just saying, like, if there was a worse you know, if there was a worse one, if there was one that was super evil that, like, you know, they were 4 years old and they were, like, mutilating kittens, you might just want to accidentally get rid of them.
Accidentally.
Speaking of which, question I've had since episode one, why isn't everyone more impressed to meet the world's one and only Avatar? Is this like a New York thing where you pretend to be unimpressed by everything? Because I feel like Korra showing up in Republic City, should be like that scene in the Selena movie where Jennifer Lopez goes to the mall. Then again, that took place in LA and we get excited over the avocados at Trader Joe's. Okay. I think that people were relatively excited. You know, like Marco was like, oh, better not be a douchebag, you're the Avatar, and stuff like that. And
she got a press conference.
She got a press conference. I thought it was a little bit weird that she was allowed to keep playing in the pro-bending game, like, because she obviously takes over as a member of the team, and then Tenzin comes and cheers for her, and it's really cute and stuff, and now she's a pro-bender, and it's just like, yeah, I'm on the pro-bending team, I'm on the Fire Fairies, as the waterbender, and she accidentally bends in the middle of the game, like another thing, because everyone comes at her and she's like, oh, I'm gonna earth bend back at you. I'm like, girl, control yourself for 5 minutes, like, seriously, control yourself for 5 minutes. Like, you literally just, if you're gonna play on this team, you should have at least, like, kept that whole thing incognito. Like, you shouldn't, they shouldn't, it's, so it's weird that the Avatar is now, like, everyone knows the Avatar is on the pro bending team. Like, that was really weird for me. I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but I felt that that was weird.
Okay, but no. I also need to say, if you're going to play on this team, like, know the rules of the game before you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think she kind of, well, not all the rules, but, like, I think she knew she wasn't meant to bend any other elements. Like, she just
but had even, like, control. Not knowing which side they had to push the other players off of, and not knowing that if she got pushed back, she had to stay back there. And it's like, did nobody explain this to her ahead of time?
I suppose not. And I don't know if her whole, like, little twirling moves in pro-branding made up for the fact that she, like, destroyed that artifact, because I was so, like, that was like her, like, I was like, Korra, like, two more strikes and you're freaking out. Like, that was horrible, the way that she burnt up that thing. I was like, are you serious? Like, that was nasty and terrible. But, yeah, I don't know, it's, she does just seem to get away with stuff, I suppose. And I suppose Aang got away with stuff as well, but this just seems like getting away with stuff on, like, a bigger and more public level. I don't know, I feel it weird. Caitlin, how did you feel about kind of the pro-bending and the rule-bending, I suppose?
Rule-bending, haha. Ba-dum-ching. I don't mind it, just because if they keep enforcing the fact that she can only water-bend and then, like, she pushes her way onto the team, and then they were, like, right about to go on to the core, or whatever you want to call it, in pro bending, so they probably didn't have much time to be, it's, like, here are all the small little rules you have to
keep
in mind.
Yeah, it's kind of like in Glee when they, like, need some Cheerios to be the extra, like, you know, 12 people so that they can compete in sectionals. It's like Jacob Ben Israel, just stand in the back and don't sing. You know? That's what Korra was in this original. She only went on so the Fire Ferrets, because she liked the team, could progress until they found a new waterbender, if you know what I mean. But then she was like, lol, I could be the new waterbender permanently once I know the rules, even though everyone knows it's the Avatar, and that's really weird and attention-y. Yeah, I was surprised that this wasn't kept private. Like, so it's a very, very strong implication that, like, everything about her turn as the Avatar is going to be really highly publicized, so that's interesting. Did anyone have any sort of questions or more thoughts about this episode before we move on? I want to get these scenes and lines out before Brittany has to go, and then we'll do the feedback.
Oh, this is on me.
It's not on you. I mean, it's not. It's reason. I also will have to go very soon. But yeah, I guess just any questions about the episode.
So, is she, like, I guess my question is more so, like, what is going to happen next? Do you know what I mean? Which is obviously what I should be asking if I want to keep watching it. But I guess I'm just, like, I feel like Tenzin is going to keep bending the rules, and I don't want that to happen. It's not really a question. It's more of a concern. I'm concerned that if that keeps up, I'm not going to like it.
Yeah, what, like, just her just
yeah, like, what we were kind of just talking about. Like, I'm getting, I don't like that a lot of things, or I hate to use the word bending, but they're, like, swaying in her favor all the time. And yes, you do get a pass a little bit, but I think because we had that whole series with Aang, and I don't want to keep bringing it up back up to Avatar The Last Airbender, but we had that whole thing with Aang where they were hiding the Avatar for so long. So, like, he had to pay the consequences. When he got captured, like, he got captured with, like, Katara. Like, they were in trouble, and they could not reveal. They couldn't pull the Avatar trump card, and I'm just nervous I'm going to get sick of the pulling of the Avatar trump card.
That's true. And, I mean, how many times in Avatar, in Aatla, were we like, they need some adults to look after them?
Yeah.
And now this is what it's like with an adult looking after, you know. Aang had to be his own, I guess, limitation. Like, he had to call his own shots about what he was doing. And this is sort of someone else calling the shots for the Avatar. Even though she's older than Aang was, she's still a kid, really. So, yeah. Any other thoughts? Did we miss anything big from this episode that you guys know? All we got out of it really is that, you know, she's going to be on the pro-bending team, apparently, because it's a good training method or something. She's allowed to keep pro-bending. And she's apparently getting a little bit better at the airbending concept, I suppose. Not much more about any villains or et cetera. Favorite moments from this episode then? Mine was actually the pro-bending commentator in general. I just love him. And I love the kind of weird little references that he throws in and will throw in. We will definitely see more pro-bending later. And so he's one of my favorites. Karen, how about you?
When Korra starts moving like an airbender, because I was like, yes, finally she's getting it and it's starting to just click. And it was nice to see it so early on.
Yeah, it would have been nicer if she could have done it before she destroyed that artifact.
Oh, but yeah, I have thoughts about that.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to that in a second. Caitlin, how about you?
So mine was after the Fire Ferrets win their match and Tenzin's little woohoo! And then he looks, he's like making sure nobody saw him and walking away. But I just love when the very stoic Tenzin has his moments of comedic relief.
I love him so much. And Brittany, how about you?
Just all of pro bending. I want to know all the rules. I want to play it. Okay. I don't know how I would play it. Like duct tape, super soakers to my arms or something. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
I was thinking, like, isn't it like a bit, you know, unsafe? I mean, obviously it's unsafe, but it's like, okay, so getting hit with water is one thing, but getting like rocks thrown into your stomach, like stone discs thrown into your belly or chest, and like blasts of fire that you have to avoid. Like, that's not that safe, but anyway, never mind. So my favorite was actually, talking about quotes, my favorite was actually one that we mentioned in the last episode, which was between Tenzin and Jinora when Korra is being horrible. You know, Tenzin sort of says to his daughter, his oldest daughter, "You must promise me that your teenage years won't be like this." And Jinora is just sort of reading and looks over the top of her book and she says, "I will make no such promises." I just love them. I love the way he talks to his kids like they're real people. And I just love his family so much. And I love that so much. I also really liked when they were doing the training, Milo being, "Be the leaf." Very cute to me. But
that was my backup quote. I really liked that. And this whole episode, like, I kept thinking of Leaf on the Wind, like Firefly. And I was like, oh, it hurts. It hurts so bad.
Yeah. Sorry. Karen, what was your chosen quote then?
Mine was when Tenzin said, "That was a 2,000-year-old historical treasure." And I was so angry at Korra because I took 4 years art history. I have a degree in art history. This is like, you should be sentenced to death for this because I am so mad about it. I can't believe in her impatience and her anger. She destroyed something that was so important, not only to like airbenders, but to Tenzin personally. And I can't deal with it.
Relatively unforgivable for something that early on, if you know what I mean. I'm like, really, like, you know, hopefully it can only be uphill from here because that was nasty. I was like
can they fix it? Can they clean it up? What was it made out of? Stone?
So they were definitely kind of putting it back together at the end of the episode. Okay. So you want to hope you know, you want to hope so. Yeah, let's cross our fingers that they can fix it. Caitlin.
So mine is in the pro-bending locker room, and Mako realizes just who Korra is, and he goes, "You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot." And Korra immediately says, "Both are true." Like, I just love that she just immediately is like, "Yep, you're an idiot."
Yeah. As I said, I did find that bit funny, but I was also like, really? Like, you only feel bad that you were rude because she's the Avatar? Like, really? But anyway, never mind that. Brittany, how about you?
Mine was the first exchange, like, the exchange between Korra and Mako, and she's like, "What does it take to impress this guy?" And he's like, "What? I said not bad. You know what? It's getting late. I think I'm going to turn in. You kids have fun." And then there's this, like, little note. It's like, as he talks, he walks away, but pauses to look back at Korra.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's like, "Nice to meet you, Avatar Korra." It's just great.
Fair enough.
Great. And then he has that longing stare out the window at the end.
Oh, God. What, when they look at each other across the water? Jesus. That's not subtle, is it? Anyway, never mind. So that's everything for the first couple of episodes. We've got a little bit of feedback to go through.
So on Twitter, we got a tweet from our good friends at Avatar Central at Avatar TLA News, and they said, "Still listening to all the Avatar episodes. Here's a recent drawing of Lee, hashtag lettuce leaf boomy, that I did, and it is brilliant, and I've retweeted it, and with a bunch of little heart eye emojis, and it's clear who it came from. It's from me, Brittany, who's obsessed with it." So awesome.
Very cute. So our, yeah, you can see that, I guess, on our Twitter now. So, yeah, I still am not 100% sure why Brittany's so obsessed with Boomy, but, I mean, he is a cool guy.
So we're going to go.
And there he is.
All right, I'm going to go. Bye.
All right, bye. See you later. Have fun. We'll go through some of the rest of this feedback together if everyone has five or so more minutes. So we'll just go down the list, excluding Brittany, I guess. So I'll do one and then Karen and Caitlin. Tweets in reaction to us starting Legend of Korra, basically. Blaze Anderson, who's Blazy Ashley on Twitter, says, "So happy Legend of Korra is starting on Rewatchable. Can't wait to listen." Well, hopefully this has been satisfactory for you, Blaze Anderson.
And Anjali, I don't know, I'm sorry, retweeted Angry Asian Man. Thoughts? Oh, this was about M. Night Shyamalan says that The Last Airbender flopped because adults didn't get it. I don't think that's why it flopped. I really don't.
Yeah, not so much.
Jesus. Yeah, you keep telling yourself that, mate. Caitlin, do you want to go ahead?
So Zach at Zach H. Official says, "I'm just about to finish a rewatch of Korra with my parents. I know, hardcore. And now I'll probably start another with Rewatchable." So yay for listening along. Have fun.
Have fun. Just listen to the intro episode. The Korra music never fails to give me chills. Love it. That was from Shelley Bookworm on Twitter as well. I really like the music, both the intro music and the, like, madcap 1920s music. I feel like someone on the team doesn't like it. I feel like someone reacted badly to the music. Maybe it was Mitch, or, like, did either of you guys like or not like the music, like, in a dramatic fashion? Like, oh, we didn't talk. She's gone now. So I like the music a lot, but, and I think it's really, really fun, but yeah. Okay, we'll go on to hyperbole comment feedback. Do we want to carry on there? Oh, this is some discussion of the thing Mitch mentioned about the animation last week in Legend of Korra. So, yeah, Karen, do you want to take this first one?
Yeah, John says, "Mitch made a comment about the animation of Korra being a bit wonky, but I heard that sometime during the middle of the production, they went with a different animation company, hence the substandard animation, and then they switched back to their regular animators."
Okay, I mean, I can't say I noticed it dramatically. I can't, maybe I can't remember it properly. Caitlin, you sort of said that you noticed it as well. But yeah, someone replied, that comment was from John Ricasa, and then someone else called Jason Bolt replied to it. Do you want to sort of read the details there?
This happened in book two. Book one was animated by Studio Mir, a Korean animation studio run by people from JM Animation, another Korean animation studio that was the main studio that worked on Atla. They weren't available at the start of book two. They were working on the Boondocks, from what I read. So the production team hired Studio Piero, I think, instead, a Japanese studio known for anime like Naruto and Bleach. They animated episodes 201 to 206 and 209. The results from Studio Piero were substandard compared to Studio Mir's work, though. It's pretty easy to tell the difference. But Mir was able to return for episodes 207, 208, and 210 to 214, and books 3 and 4. And another Korean studio, Reeve, was brought in to share animation studios. So that's kind of summing up the back and forth of animation.
Oh, okay. That's really, really, thorough. So someone clearly knows what they're talking about. He has sort of finished off by saying Studio Piero is the one that he didn't like the most. Only animated a small portion of Legend of Korra, though it sounds like Mitch was talking the animation of the show in general as choppy, and I have to disagree with him. I think Legend of Korra's animation routinely surpassed Atlas, having more artistic detail, better character design, better fluidity to the animation and action scenes. I definitely think it looks nicer. Like, it looks more realistic, kind of like the face drawings and stuff are a more detailed and realistic drawing, I think.
It looks more mature, I think. Just overall feel of the show. That's not to say that Avatar looked childish, but I think it just shows that a lot of time has passed since Avatar ended, and the animation has improved significantly in that time.
Yeah. We don't have any reviews on iTunes this week because apparently nobody listened to Freaks and Geeks. And they were only here for our Zootaric Tang Wars, Caitlin would like to add, and Maiko, of course. And, you know, maybe we'll find out the end game of that in this series. Obviously, we found out that, you know, Katang was at least end game enough to have some babies. So, okay. If you'd like to review us on iTunes, you could do that because our iTunes reviews are back. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will dance like nobody's watching. I mean, that seems good and relatively harmless.
I could do that.
That seems harmless. Maybe they only like it when they're the really tough and terrible ones. But yeah, I guess that's the end of our episode. If you'd like to contact us about our first episode or what's coming up, again, no spoilers for the newbies, please be careful about what you consider a spoiler. You can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, tweet us at re_watchable, or comment on this post on Hyperbole. Or you can send us a message or reblog us or hang out with us on Tumblr. iTunes reviews are great. They help keep the podcast alive. And, yeah, Karen's really keen to actually offer up some of these incentives in real reality, or at least in video blog form. So that could be fun for everyone. So until next time, Brittany's already gone because she has to watch the Tonys. So she said bye. But I'm Natalie.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Caitlin.
Bye-bye.
Bye.